We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Powered by Learfield. The Bobcat Insider, your exclusive look at Montana State Athletics. Now, here's the voice of the Bobcats, Jay Sanderson.
Well, today we have a special episode of the Bobcat Insider podcast. On this Memorial Day weekend, we as a nation pause to honor those who have fought and died protecting our freedoms. Memorial Day dates back more than 150 years. It began as an event to honor Union soldiers who died during the American Civil War. After World War I, it was extended to include all men and women who have died in any war or military action. In short, it is a day of remembrance. With us today is Bill Lamberty, who is the Sports Information Director at Montana State University and is also something of a program historian. You can follow him on Twitter at @BLamberty. And Bill, Memorial Day carries a special meaning for Montana State Athletics. Two significant instances of combat losses are indelibly carved into Bobcat lore. Both World War I and World War II brought great loss for the Bozeman campus. Let's start with World War I. Cyrus J. Gatton, better known as Cy Gatton, played for the football team at Montana College of Agriculture and Mechanical Arts. It wasn't until the 1920s that the school became known as Montana State College, but Gatton played football here from 1913 to 1916, born in Iowa, raised in Bozeman, enlisted in the United States Army Air Service, which was a precursor to the Air Force, and he was killed in a mission right towards the end of World War I, just 1 week before the armistice in 1918. His story is quite remarkable.
Yeah, he was a local kid, Gallatin County High School, was a star at the high school, came down the street, up the hill, and was a star at Montana State. And, you know, it's always interesting in those days. The University of Montana was referred to as the university, and MSU was referred to as the college. And that's how many people in the state differentiated the two, or Bozeman and Missoula, which still happens. But Cy Gatton was a very well-known figure around this part of the state, and certainly here in Gallatin County.
So he was one of the last American deaths in World War I. He died on November 4th, 1918. Of course, Armistice, which was known as Armistice Day before it became known as Veterans Day. World War I ended on November 11th, 1918. And Cy Gatton left a pretty lasting impression around here.
Well, he was, for years and years thereafter, he was known as Montana State's all-time quarterback. You still see references to that in old media guides and old news clippings. And was really a standout athlete at a time when the Bobcats didn't necessarily have great football success. 1915, the Cats were 4-2-1. And that was the team's last winning record. 1920, the team was 3-1-1. So some teams that maybe weren't super successful, but he was a star, and he was credited for a lot of the program's pre-World War II success.
And after he was killed in the war, in World War I, the class of 1917 voted in 1920 that when a new football field were to be built, it should be named in Gatton's honor.
Yeah, to that point, the team played its games primarily over in the middle of campus where the new cafeteria is being raised, which has pretty much been thoroughly developed. But in the first decade or so when I got here, that was a big empty field. It was used for frisbee golf, and students spent a lot of time out there. Then part of it was dedicated to a parking lot, and now it's been pretty well developed as the campus has continued to grow. But big games would occasionally be played down at the fairgrounds. But in the years after World War I, as athletics continued to grow, Romney Gym was built. It was decided and spurred in large part by the students that a permanent home for the football field had to be built on campus. So it was the southern edge of campus at that point was Gatton Field, which is now been covered over by the new Asbjornsen Engineering Building, a parking garage, Schroyer Gym, and the Health and PE Complex has all pretty much covered that field up. But that for many, many years, 40 years, was the home of Bobcat football.
And then to kind of move from World War I to World War II, the next major conflict involving the United States, the Bobcat football team in 1941 was a pretty ordinary team. They didn't have a great year, but there were 14 men who were on that football team that went and fought and were killed in World War II. Orrin Beller, Newell Berg, Dana Bradford, John Berg, Bernard Clusen, William Coey, Carl Fye, John Hall, Joseph McGeever, John Phelan, Richard Roman, Wendell Skabad, Alton Zimple are among those who were killed in World War II, and all of them were on the 1941 Montana State football team. Was it 41?
Well, they're all in the years leading up to World War I.
World War II,
World War II were all outstanding football players. So the 39, 40, and 41 team, some of those gentlemen had gone off to service before the 41 season. So the 1941 campaign, Montana State really only had about 15 players that made it through most of the season. And it's amazing to think that 4 days after the Cats lost to Idaho at Boise to end the season, the Imperial Army sailed for Pearl Harbor. And, we know what happened from that point. But it's just an amazing – and. We think of that as something that you obviously can't identify until after the war years, but there's a fantastic historian author named John Lucas, who's a tremendous World War II historian who did a considerable amount of work talking to survivors and families in the last decade or so. And he found reference to the fact that that 1946 team, which was the first team after Montana State reconvened after World War II and went to a bowl game, was MSU's first ever bowl team, or MSC's. And, really a historic outfit in this school. Students and players still had in mind the Golden Ghosts, those players from right before World War II that perished in the war effort. And I can't help but think that a lot of that is because there was one player from the pre-war years who returned from the war and played after World War II, Bill Zupan, whose brother Al had played a little bit earlier in the 30s. I think he was done in 38 or 39. And he died during World War II. And they were a Montana family from Sand Coulee. And Bill Zupan, for many, many years, resided in Helena. And I had the chance to meet him not too long before he passed, but he came down and met Travis Lule and had some photos taken. It was a very meaningful, moving thing to have him down on a Veterans Day weekend. But I can't help but think that his presence really helped inspire. And of the 71 players on the team, more than half had returned from the war effort. And so college athletics in those days, because of the, you know, the veterans receiving free education and so on, the GI Bill, as it would become known, really had a strong presence on college campuses, but particularly in college football.
Yeah, that 1946 team went 5-3-1. Their tie was against New Mexico, a 13-13 tie, and they played in the Harbor Bowl. And you mentioned Bill Zupan. That was a pretty remarkable team. It was a special team, and they got a lot of national attention. I mean, little old Montana State College in Bozeman, Montana, at that time, not a very big town, but they received a lot of national attention for being able to go out and fly the flag, not only of the school, but also of the United States, having lost so many student athletes at that time, and then come back and have a good football season.
Bill Zupan once said that, you know, a lot of other college programs got the front pages, but those Bobcats got the front lines. And that, I thought, was a pretty pretty poignant thing to say. But what happened in the years after World War II, there was a nationally syndicated columnist and radio host named Bill Stern, who unearthed that story. And he didn't have it exactly right, but he used it on his radio, nationally syndicated radio show, and talked about the Golden Bobcats and the most distinguished team in college football from before World War II, and called them the Golden Bobcats, even though that name had sort of previously been assigned to the great basketball program. But Bill Stern really revived those guys. He sort of created a niche in history that people understood, you know, that certainly colleges all across the nation had experienced that. And the only schools that played football through World War II were schools with enormous military training spots. You know, the University of Iowa was one, and there are a few scattered all over the country, but most colleges disbanded their football programs. So when college football returned after World War II, you know, people told stories. And Bill Stern said, not quite accurately, that the entire starting lineup from the 1941 team had perished in World War II, and that wasn't quite accurate, but certainly it was not too far off the truth, and it also really helped form that team into sort of a legendary outfit, and rightfully so, because this school, I saw a survey once that Montana State and schools in this part of the country were way disproportionately hit by military losses during World War II. So certainly any recognition and any honor that could come to this program and programs like it was well-deserved.
And what is remarkable about that is in the 1940s, the sense of service in the United States and amongst citizens, it was true patriotism at its finest, because let's fast forward to after the September 11th terrorist attacks in 2001, rightfully so, the acclaim that Pat Tillman received for abandoning his football career and going and serving and ultimately dying in service of the United States, how revered a figure he has become, that was every man in the 1940s.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, we were both raised by people that if not exactly from the greatest generation, were products of it. And, you know, through their lives, those men and people, women who supported, you know, the families on the home front, that class and generation of people, you know, really formed what, you know, in the middle and latter part of the 20th century, America came to be and came to stand for. And when you think about, you know, what those guys that John Lucas talked to, and you see a lot of news clippings and a lot of testimonials that say, you know, the pre-war years were very carefree, you know, college campus and a lot of fun and laughs. And all of a sudden, you know, it was just taken away. And there was no choice but to serve your country, because when you're attacked on the homeland, which Hawaii was and is, it and, you know, New York City and the East Coast in later years, 911, that's a very, very real and rattling experience.
And, you know, people of my generation, born in 1980 or later, kind of lose what that was all about, because it's just a different time now. And I'll, as you mentioned, you and I are both raised by people who were, you know, of a product of that greatest generation. My grandfather was a World War II veteran. He actually passed away on December 7, 2001, the 60th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And I will never forget sitting with him the first time he saw the movie Saving Private Ryan. And just he was in awe of how real that movie was and how realistically it was portrayed. And to see that and to watch that unfold on your television is just it's a world that's completely foreign to me. It really is.
Well, the last time my daughter was home from college, we looked through one of my dad's old scrapbooks, and we kept coming to obituary announcements and sympathy cards and so on and so forth. And she finally asked what the deal was. And I said, well, those were all my dad's friends from high school that perished during the war. And my grandma kept the clippings, kept the cards, you know, all that sort of thing. And so, you know, that really brings it to life that if you were a high school, you know, if you were coming of age in the 40s, you know, entire young male communities of towns were wiped out, and, you know, people lost many, many friends. And so, you know, to kind of walk this campus when you're thinking about, you know, that group of guys or how the students must have rallied around the death of Cy Gatton, you know, it's really a poignant thing at times like Memorial Day and Veterans Day.
Well, it is a special weekend, and we hope everybody is able to honor our nation's finest who did fight and die in service of our nation. So a thank you to all the veterans out there, and again, a big thank you to those who have served. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, now available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Also, stay engaged and interactive with us. You can follow Bill, as we mentioned, on Twitter, at B. Lamberty. You can follow me on Twitter, at MSU Bobcats Voice. I'm Jay Sanderson. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Bobcat Insider. Be sure to stay up to date with all things Montana State Athletics by visiting MSUBobcats.com and by following the Cats on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram using the handle MSUBobcats. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.